Here.
Alan Starnes?
Here.
Sherwin Brown?
Here.
Jack Foster?
Excused.
Maria Henderson?
Here.
Brad Flush?
Here.
Very good. We do have a quorum. We'll go ahead and move on to the approval agenda this evening. Before we ask if there's any addition or deletions, would we strike under the approval agenda certification of election and it was in there from last time? And can we move executive session to after council comments? If there aren't any other additions or deletions, I'd entertain a motion to approve as amended.
Make a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
Motion's been made by Shirley. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Danny. Any other discussion? Not hearing any. Roll call, please.
Grant?
Yes.
Danny?
Yes.
Maria?
Yes.
Shirley?
Yes.
Alan? Yes.
Very good. Motion carries. Moving on to the consent agenda. We have one item this evening. It's the minutes of the regular meeting of October 14th, 2014. Has everybody had a chance to go through the minutes? If so, anything, any comments, any corrections, typos, etc.? Not hearing any, I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Okay, motion's been made by Marita. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Alan. Any other discussion? Not hearing any. Roll call, please.
Shirley?
Yes.
Alan?
Yes.
Danny?
Yes.
Marita?
Yes.
Brad?
Yes.
Very good. Motion carries. We'll move on to reports. The first one on the list this evening is our finance officer. And Krista, the floor is yours.
Raw fish tax revenue for October was $32,213.32. Sales tax revenue for October was $80,892.09. There's a bank balance included for all bank accounts. Expenditure and revenue guidelines. Fund summary.
Very good. Thanks.
We shortened.
Yeah, we'll be more concise. And of course, we can always call Krista. But any questions for Krista this evening? Go ahead, Andy.
Krista, on the expenditure guidelines, revenue guidelines, those are through October.
Yeah.
So it's.
I don't get November.
All right. So it's 33%. So like a 30.
Very good. Other questions for Krista? Not hearing any. Well, thank you. That's too soon. Maybe we'll just stick around. Slow time of the year. Okay. With that, we're going to move on to number two, Administrator Andy. The floor is yours.
All right. Good evening. I'll touch on a few topics from October. The first one is the road project. Obviously, it's done. Just to bring you up to date on some of the expenditures and revenue portions. Through the beginning of this month, you can see what our expenditures are. Some of the design costs and structure administration costs are actually a bit less than we had anticipated. Not all of those invoices are in yet, but with that being the case, we added the state grant money, portion of Trident and the borough's contribution. We've about 50 for the project. So the borough's stepping up and contributing to help funding gap that we had definitely helped fund the project. So it makes doing it this year all that much better.
the thank you off to this assembly members. One or
yes.
In the room today. Please.
With the dock project, P&D, the engineers, finished up their replacement report, and here's a brochure that we printed. They're going to produce a professional-looking brochure that will be used for handing to the legislators and the Department of Transportation staff like that. Essentially, this boils down our preferred alternative for replacing the dock, which is just a pile-supported dock. Basically, it's a replica of what we have. 30-something years newer, and adding on 20 feet. When they finalize the report next week, it'll also take into account that the Tustin Mina will have a ramp, possibly even have ramp access, so that'll be part of the schematic and the design on there. Replacing the dock is a you know, according to them, a $9 million, a little more project, so we'll have some heavy lifting to do this year in the legislature, but the DOT commissioner was one of the, there's only two commissioners that survived the changing of the governor, and the DOT is one of those, and he was a big advocate of this project, so we'll see what happens with the budget. In the harbor, we just have a couple more loose ends to tie up. One of those is paying McGone and resolve the remaining money that was due to them for fixing the billets. That's an agenda item later. And we're still negotiating with R&M and URS for their design and inspection flaws. And we hope to work whatever we can recoup from them. Next month, I'll definitely have all of those loose ends will be tied up. How the attorney's discussions are going. Went to the boat show, the Marine Expo, with the mayor. That was a good couple days down there. Met a lot of fishermen, talked with some other harbors, especially regarding some of the issues that their harbors of Homer and Sewer and Petersburg are experiencing, the electrical issues. They went through the same thing, so I talked with some harbor masters and city managers there about that. And Glenn, I'll let you, Mr. Mayor, let me come in. I also got to go to the Alaska Managers Association meetings that were in conjunction with AML around the same time. And that was good. A few things that I wanted to, that I came away wanting to follow up on are trying to rein in healthcare costs a little bit more for the city. Some communities are doing some good things in that area, so I'll follow up there. Working on the community jails, and the police chief and I have already talked about that. And, reviewing the city's comprehensive plan, which is over 10 years old. There's still relevant parts in there. I reviewed it just a couple weeks ago, but it might be a good exercise in the next year to revisit it and see what things need to be updated or things that we've accomplished, like rehabilitating the harbor. The community facility power cost equalization applications are in to the Energy Authority. They've approved the three that I sent in, and I sent in another 10 the same day that we got the approval. And that'll help the city save some money in the case of some other operations, like in the harbor, when we're charging electricity. We should get a reduced rate out of that through the PCP, so that would be helpful too. The audit's completed. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. Water and sewer, Alan and I have already talked. We're going to try to narrow down the top capital project priorities for fixing some of the water and sewer deficiencies we have in the city, and then applying for some funds next year to the state to try to get a matching grant. I did talk to one of the DEC water guys. He was actually going to plan to be out this week. And a water engineer from ANTHC was also going to be out this week, but that guy got in a car wreck, broke his arm, so he'll be out next month. And they can help with some of the project planning and cost estimates. That'd be nice. Substance abuse, as far as I know, we submitted a proposal to get some to fund a pilot project for a rehabilitation house for Oxford House. Yeah. Oxford House model, and we'll see if it makes it into the budget again. Another example project, we'll find out if that goes. That has wheels next month. And then we're working on some EMS issues. I'll let the chief touch on that a little bit.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Andy. Questions for Andy? Not hearing any. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Rhea.
Cheryl? This house. Who's going to build this house? Who's going to own this house?
The way the proposal is set up, it would be, it's an already existing structure. We should have the authority to donate it. And the, so it's an initial house. What the approach is with the Oxford House is the tenants have jobs and they all contribute in rent.
Create.
Yes.
We're still working on the proposal. I'm not sure.
Maybe if you have more questions, I think Brenda could answer.
It's going to be an Oxford house, similar to the ones that are down below. We have three in each, and they are managed. It'll be managed and supported by each of either a home mother or father that will reside in the house. They'll have their own rules and regulations. Looking to meet lockdown times, they'll have to agree to jobs, certain jobs that they have. They can go anywhere from 6 months to a year, probably, of living there. And that's just for them if they come back to rehab or if they go up to detox somewhere in the region and they want to come here, and they're able to reside here and stay substance use free during that time. That'll be how social will come in and support them through counseling and talking every day on a weekly, monthly basis. It's really intense, usually once a month. So it's going to be a really, really good program to go through the guidelines and all that bylaws that need to. So with that, with the Lucian Housing Authority and the Eastern Lucian Tribe, we've got a pretty large grant that supports it. And so there's the whole region, East End API, coming together on this. So it's not only Sound Creek, it's from all of the same calling plus PI. And all of you, it's a community of ADAC. So the people would be able to be in the We're also looking at a full over staff for people also. So we have two in the region, hopefully.
Very good. Thank you. Other questions? Not hearing any. Thanks, Andy. Quickly, I'll just touch. First off, I also attended the mayor's conference, which was a half day in Anchorage, and then I caught a plane to Seattle to make the boat show. But it was very interesting. Very good turnout, Alaska mayors this year. A lot of the same old faces and a lot of new ones. So it was good to touch base again and rekindle some of those relationships that we had prior, which was good. A lot of things haven't changed, but a lot of things have. We did listen to Ray Gillespie works for, I don't know if he works for the state now, or is he still a lobbyist?
He's a lobbyist for AML.
Okay, lobbyist for AML. He came in and kind of gave us the spread on what's happening with the oil industry and how it's going to affect the state and its finances, and it is actually pretty grim. But that's going to affect us all in the state, and I think that's going to be across the board. But we'll deal with that as it comes, and I just hope everybody keeps their eyes open to how we're going to have to deal with this, because things are going to change. We did make it to Seattle. Andy and I did a stint of watching the booth for the borough and the cities and whatnot, which was very good. We spent a few hours, maybe six to be exact, but seeing more people I hadn't seen in a long time, which was good, so we caught up on a lot of old times and met with a lot of people. Our Boat Harbor people came by on the lift, and an individual who purchased one of the boats, they came by, the ones who actually paid the bill. And so we got to meet a lot of people, and that was a good thing, so a lot of connecting again. After that, we had a couple days of meetings. Or one day, I do believe, we hit with Peter Pan. Of course, it was a good meeting with them. We just kind of touched base with, they come over here as they're kind of like an outreach area, but they send tenders, and it was a little gloom and doom with them on fish prices and all that kind of stuff, and we'll take that as it comes. They do that all the time, but there's a big prediction for red salmon next year, so it'll be interesting to see where they start out on prices for red salmon. But they assured us that they're going to be here for another 100 years, and they had recently, I don't know, it's been about 2 weeks ago, but they had a severe storm in King Cove and blew off a section of the crab cannery roof, and then right above the office was like 100 by 100, lifted up like 3 or 4 feet, and then just crashed back down and pretty much wrecked that whole section of the building. So they're going to be doing, what, 3-4 months of reno? Yeah. So, but I guess it's in process already, so they're moving forward with that, and they said it shouldn't affect processing for this winter, so they got those things fixed up so far. So that was a good meeting with Peter Pan. We met with Trident, Chris Arnhem, Joe Bundrand, and I want to say, I keep forgetting his name, is Ronald.
Ron, he
dealt with the shipping part. One of the big things with Trident, I think, that came up and that we were chatting about is they have leased, well, they haven't, Northern or Verizon Lines have leased a section of the property in a new harbor, which they store all their vans on. That's going to change hands. Matson just purchased Verizon and all their debt, and I think there are going to be a lot of cutbacks along the way. So Trident is probably going to be picking up that section, and a lot of the equipment, et cetera. So we may be working with a lease with them, so I think we were kind of feeling out the groundwork with that, and we'll move forward with that. But otherwise, we had a good meeting with Trident, and we continue to work well with them, so that's moving forward. With that, I don't think I had anything else, so we'll just move forward on the agenda. And next on the list is our Department of Public Safety, and John, floor is yours.
Thank you. Good evening. Included in the report is some statistical information related to the police division. As you can see, over the last couple of months, it's been pretty steady. It hasn't been overwhelming. We don't divide into and through the holidays at that same page. One interesting note that I'll give to the police department is I attended a two-day workshop with the QT tribe about their developing a tribal justice plan and how we're going to further expand the court here. Perhaps a little local youth who get into trouble and also first-time offenders at misdemeanor levels. Maybe even include some DV. So as they develop that court, we're working real closely with them, making sure that it's going to serve both, you know, everyone in the city, that it's not going to be an obstacle to what we're doing and that we're working together. And I'm kind of excited about it. May even produce a position or two that can help. One thing that we really lack here locally is when people get into trouble and they're on probation, there's no one to check on them. And unfortunately, a lot of times we don't see them again until they get into trouble because no one's checking, and this might be the person to act in that medium and just be as much of a counselor and prevent order as anything. So I continue to say that we'll continue to work with them in that regard. Into EMS, we're very busy in EMS right now. Currently, we have some training going on. We have an ETT refresher course, an EMT refresher course, and then full courses for both those programs as well. And we're hoping to boost volunteerism in the service. We need a few more people. We need unskilled people, too, that are willing to be drivers and whatnot. So if someone's out there that wants to offer support but doesn't necessarily want to take on, you know, dedicating 6 weeks or 4 weeks to heavy team training, well, we have room and need for those people too, so I encourage you to step up and maybe ask how you can help. And the same goes for the fire department. The fire department's in a bit of a lull right now, and we're certainly open to having somebody on board or multiple people on board just to do small tasks around the fire hall and help us in the event that we have an emergency, we're able to respond to it and that our equipment's running and functioning properly. So I just call out to everyone, encourage them to maybe step forward and give a little bit of time if they're interested. In regard to EMS and EATS, who we're co-oping with for this training, we're continuing to work on our memorandum of agreement. And in that, one of the issues is billing for the ambulance. It's an issue that's not ever been addressed before. When the ambulance runs, insurance companies may have policies that cover patients, but we've never asked them to pay the bill, frankly. And so we're in the process of working with these, developing a billing system and maintaining type of confidentiality. And it seems like something that might be real straightforward and you just send a bill, but we're finding out it's much more complicated. But these have been open-minded to that and working well together. We're also addressing things like mental health responses and incarceration and what alternatives there might be to that to best serve the public, as well as a dispatch agreement where we provide services to them, they in kind of provide services to us. We've always had a good relationship where we work together, and there's not been anything in writing, and we've come through stumbling blocks and kind of both agree that it's better to formalize our relationship in PAM, and so we'll continue to do that. And I feel comfortable with how a good agreement coming forward. We recently got batteries back. You might not have heard the siren for the last month here on Fridays, but we just got batteries back. We got new batteries, not batteries back, but new batteries to support the system. They should be getting installed here real recently. Alan just reminded me of that need. But they're here. They were courtesy of the State of Alaska Department of Homeland Security, who gave them to us. It cost about $1,000 probably by the time they got here. We're happy to have those, and if you don't care to get up after Friday, this upcoming Friday, probably next Friday, feel free to ask. Other than questions, that's about all I have.
Very good. Thanks, John. Questions? Cheryl?
I just wanted to ask again about the volunteers that drive the ambulance or go on the ambulance runs. They're concerned that they would like to have a police officer there when they go on those runs because they never know what they're getting themselves into.
Sure,
so I was wondering what your policy was on that.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit earlier. Our policy is to send an officer, man officer on duty and available. We certainly want to help them. We've been, I can't think of boy, the last several calls that have gone down that we haven't been to. We've been to every one that I can think for the last few months. So we have been affording them that. And I certainly encourage anybody in the MS service to come and talk to me if you have a concern. And you can feel free to forward them. I'm glad to relay the interest and request. But we have a hard policy to respond and help in every way we can. As a matter of fact, Officer Spencer is currently taking the ETT course and his time away from being an officer, he's also going to be running an ambulance volunteer.
Thank you.
Other questions for John? Not hearing any. Thank you, John. Public Works Director, Dave is out on a little extended vacation. He will be back after the new year. Filling in is Paul Carlson. Everything is going well. They are taking care of all the daily maintenance issues, sanding with our slippery roads. It's been pretty slick here the last few days in between some of the rain and the freeze, so they've been on that, but everything else is going well. taking care of the garbage, et cetera, so everything's going well with Public Works. With that, we'll move on to the Harbor Master, and Richard, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. Christmas is still coming.
Yeah.
guys have been busy down there. They've started going to clean up the white metal down in the New Harbor where the metal dump was growing, and they took the majority of the wash machines, dryers, refrigerators, and freezers up to the landfill, and they were hauling some of the other stuff up there. But there's a lot of big stuff left, so they were just straightening it up a little bit. They have completed cordoning off the boats, so you can't drive in amongst them with the vehicle anymore, which is a good thing. And I've ordered more ladders for the boat harbor, the climb up ladders installed. You know, they were used a couple, there was a couple of ladders used last summer, so, and they're well worth their weight in gold. And machinery, still servicing machinery, order bits and pieces when we need to port. But I'm in communication or working with Kendrick Equipment in Canada. They're the ones that are, they come out and inspect the travel lift when we need to. They're working for Marine Travel Lift. And they should be coming out soon this month, maybe the first of the year or something, hopefully. And there's a Coast Guard courtesy inspection in January, the 5th to the 7th, and more, and another one in May, they're saying. Other than that, the water lines at the harbor have all been drained. We blew the water out of them. So there's only one place in the harbor where you can get fresh water for your boat. It's down at the end of the east wall where the ice machine used to be. And we're still sending batteries. There's more batteries going on the boat to Seattle tonight, used batteries, thanks to Coastal. And that's about all I have.
Very good. Questions for Richard? Not hearing any. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move right along on our agenda. And next on the agenda is our student representative. And Colton, I guess the floor is yours.
All right. I'll start off with the new student council members we have due to one member resigning. We have a new social chair in Naomi Krause. And filling in her spot, that 10th grade rep is Johnny Pilcher. We're still doing sports locker signs. We've got the wrestling signs up, and I don't know why the volleyball signs are not up yet. And we'll get the basketball signs up soon. We had a wrestling and volleyball pep assembly on the 2nd. The Kinko wrestlers were here on their way to regionals, and we got played some games that we haven't really played before, and we all had fun. At the Fall Ossog on October 30th through the 2nd at Wasilla, I think it was, Madison and Naomi went there and got a resolution passed for new lockers in our school that we should get. They haven't been replaced in the 30 years the school's been up there. For we've still been doing staff recognition. Since last meeting, we've recognized our new shop teacher, Mr. Rob, and maintenance man, Bob Nyberg. We gave them a certificate showing our appreciation of them. We gave them some baked goods. In our meetings, we've been going over our responsibilities for the Trident Tip-Off Tournament that's going to be happening here. And we've been going over all the activity sheets and meetings to make sure that no events overlap still.
What are you guys looking at for a date for the tournament?
January 15th, 16th, 17th.
Okay, good. That'll break up a little bit of that wintertime doldrums.
Yeah.
Good.
The Christmas concert, I believe, is on Thursday, December 11th, if I'm not mistaken.
Tomorrow?
Okay. Yeah. And the Seniors Christmas Bazaar is on the 13th. I'm still not sure about that one. In wrestling, Alex got third place at regionals at Bethel and is going to state on the 11th at ACS. He did good. I could have went to regionals, but my elbow had an infection in it. So I'm pretty sad about that. But basketball season started up now. Practice started. And the boys' home games versus King Cove. And girls have away games at King Cove December 17th through 19th.
That's next week.
Yeah, next Wednesday. Christmas break starts on the 19th. And the Try and Tip-Off Tournament's January 15th through 17th. King Cove, New Stew, and Port Allsworth boys and girls are going to be here.
Be some good game.
Yeah. And that's all I have.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Colton. Anybody have questions for Colton? Okay, thanks again for coming this evening. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Okay, we're going to move right along to hearings, ordinances, and resolutions. First on the agenda is the Ordinance 2014-10. It's amending our FY15 budget to increase legal expenditures, and this will be our second reading this evening. But do you have anything to add to that, Andy?
No, I don't. It's
pretty straightforward. With that, I'd entertain a motion to put it on the floor for the second reading.
I'll make a motion to put Ordinance 2014-10 on the floor for second reading.
Very good. Motion's been made by Marita. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Rayette. Any other discussion? Not hearing any. Can I have a roll call, please?
Marita?
Yes.
Rayette?
Yes.
Shirley?
Yes.
Allen?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Okay, quickly, did you want to chat a little bit more, or shall we just move on, Andy? Anything else to add?
No, nothing else to add. Hopefully
okay. Is there any comments from the second reading? We'll be moving on. Not hearing any, I'd entertain a motion to adopt Ordinance 2014-10.
I'll make a motion to adopt Ordinance 2014-10.
Motion been made by Rayette. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Danny. Any further discussion? Not hearing any. Roll call, please.
Danny?
Yes.
Shirley?
Yes.
Rhea?
Yes.
Marita?
Yes.
Alan?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Ordinance 2014-10 has passed. So we will move on to number 2, Ordinance 2014-11. It's amending the Vicious Dogs Code, and this will be put on the floor for the second reading. Again, we did go through this, and we chatted a bit about it this afternoon, but at this time I'd entertain a motion to put it on the floor for the second reading so we can discuss.
Make a motion to put it on the floor for second reading.
Motion's been made by Shirley. Do we have a second?
Yes.
Second by Alan. Any other discussion? Not hearing any. Roll call, please, Shannon.
Danny?
No.
Rhea?
No.
Shirley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, motion carries. It'll be on the floor for second reading and discussion, and then we will go from there. With that, I do believe we have a few people that want to address the issue. Who would like to start, and then maybe we can hear from some council members, and then we can move on. Anyone from the public would like to start on this issue? Anybody? Debbie, go ahead.
I guess I want to just restate my position that I'm against this proposed amendment. I do believe that your ordinance already addresses vicious dogs, and I think that that covers in cases that without being really specific. I think that it's the owner's responsibility that their dog, if their dog becomes vicious, I think it's their responsibility. And I mean, it's their responsibility to keep it from becoming vicious, I guess, and keep it under their control. The trend is moving away from banning specific breeds, but starting to go the other way, and I like to think of our community as not getting on the end of something. I mean, this is going to go away in 3 years. You won't see it anymore, breed-specific legislation. You've got the American Bar Association. They're urging to repeal the BSL laws. You've got 17 states that now prohibit that legislation, and there's six more that are following in their steps. So the states are coming in and saying you can't do it. Be breed specific. Most of the American dogs are of mixed ancestry, so determining what a dog pedigree is a problem. DNA testing, without DNA testing, I don't think that it's really, you can't be 100% sure. And even with DNA testing, it can just wash out so much that you would have a hard time. In closing, I just want to say that I think that when we create ordinances, I think they should be based on facts and not being based on emotions or fears. But I think that we should take a good look at all sides of it. We should work together. We should find common ground without taking away anybody's rights. I want my neighbor to feel safe. I don't want my neighbor to be afraid of my dog. But that's my responsibility. And I don't want to have to give up my pet because somebody's afraid that of my pet's breed. And so I do believe it's my responsibility to keep my dog from becoming a nuisance or threatening to a neighbor. That's something that should not happen. So I feel bad that this has happened to somebody in our town. I mean, it's terrible what happened to her. But I don't think that constitutes me losing my rights to my pets. My other question or my other thought was, if we killed all the pit bull type dogs, what breed would be the next target? I mean, where does it stop? Do we go after German Shepherds next? And, I mean, I think that we need to hold the pet owner accountable, and I think that the deeds and not a breed should be punished. I think that if you have a vicious dog, then I think our police department can take care of that. And we have the ordinance that will do that. And so, I guess that's just the owner's responsibility to make sure their animal is not harming. And it's their responsibility to train and control their dog, keep control of their dog. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Thanks, Debbie. Anybody else? Comments? Melanie? Go ahead.
I already spoke at the last meeting, but I don't, all the people that are here weren't here when I first relayed on to my experience with the really problem dog that we had a few years back. And it's really hard for me to explain it in words, so I actually made a picture. This is looking out my window, standing at my kitchen, looking down at my sister's house and my brother's house and the dog. I just want to say, okay, in 1 year, in the fall time, when this particular dog came to town, it was a nice little puppy. And all the time while I was picking plants out in my sister's house, the dog ran away around the whole yard with my dog, and they ran around and played. And that was all great, but then by throughout the winter, what happened, I had to watch that out my window all the time, and I could see people come into the house, and one day I actually saw a lady with two kids coming, because Jessica was taking care of them, and the dog had been barking at other people, and I just stood there in horror as she stopped, because she had her two kids behind her, and the dog was just barking viciously at her and the kids, and they were familiar with them, and so was the dog's familiar with me, too, but pretty soon it got rougher and rougher, and they tied it up. And so my dog going down to play with it would stay, you know, just beyond the reach of the dog, because it was getting rougher and rougher. And by springtime, I do clean up and such all down there, and I know it hadn't seen me in a couple months, but it did a total circle all the way around me, wanting to attack me. I felt like it didn't, of course, because I talked in a really soft voice at the dog and called it by name, but it still acted like it didn't even know me, and I didn't have my dog with me, so I was moved very slowly all the way till I got to my sister's house and went inside, and by then I was shaking. I was so afraid. I thought for sure at any moment it was going to attack. So later on that summer, this is like only a few months down the line from it being a cute little puppy that we thought was going to be a nice dog and such, but by then it had gotten complaints, and she had actually was forced to put a muzzle on the dog also to keep it tied up. And another instance where I watched Walter and Lorraine coming home and park into the driveway there, and the dog was loose, and I watched in horror, oh my god, it's good, and it's headed right for them. And I know that they could probably tell you the exact same story, but came up to them, barking at them viciously, and as they slowly made their way to their house, that's all you had to do. You had to walk very, very slowly because of fear of being attacked. But that later in that summer, in August, is when my dad was coming to visit my sister Joanna. And he had Shadow, the family dog, in the back of the car, which stayed there. But as my dad started walking down the boardwalk, the dog came after him to attack him, at which time Shadow jumps out of the truck and fends off the attack on my father, walking innocently down the boardwalk. He ran back to the truck, grabbed a scoop net that he had in the back, and was able to put the net over the dog so that it didn't cause harm to Shadow as he was trying to fight off that dog. And then by then, the muzzle on the dog was all cockeyed, and it was able to actually be fighting in the Shadow. So that experience, like, made the whole neighborhood and the relationship with Jessica, the owner of the dog, just horrible. We used to be great friends. But then we had to be asking her, please, we'll help you send it out to Anchorage to give it to another home that where it can be taken care of, because she wasn't being able to control it. And, of course, I had to worry, too, about the kids coming to visit my sister, like Peyton and Chloe and the young girls would go visit my sister all the time, plus clients who were coming with their taxes. God forbid if they would have been innocently walking in and were attacked. It was just a fear I had all the time, watching out my kitchen window all the time, down there, watching in horror all the time, until the day that the fighting, and not fighting, but arguing going on over this dog got to the point where Jessica decided she was going to unplug the cord out of this darn satellite dish there. So that became a big battle. And Joanna called and said, I need to go plug it back in because she unplugged me again. Can maybe John come down, because I'm really afraid to go over there. And we discussed it. I said, okay, if you're going down there, you are going to be armed with our weapon, my weapon. And so he, thank God, listened to me. I still think to this day, and then as I watched out that window, Joanna at the satellite dish, John standing there with his hands up, like going, why do you guys keep doing this? This is crazy. And I could see that dog barking away at the end of the leash, right at the side of the corridor. That's all I could see was a dog and then the guy, her husband, standing with his arms like that and holding on to the dog, and then all of a sudden he let go. It was like a big motion as that dog went flying, right, not towards John, but right towards Joanna, like full speed, and I just was in shock. I couldn't believe it was happening. Then all of a sudden, John pulls out the gun and shot him, and it took 3 shots in that dog to stop him from going forward to get to my sister, and it could have killed her. It could have killed John. Could have killed either of them, but his fast reaction to put 3 bullets in the side of that dog to stop it, and then it finally went running down the boardwalk to the road where it finally dropped. And I'm just shaking right now, just reliving this whole nightmare, because when I saw that new dog in town, I just, like, it was like, oh my God, it's happening again. I know that everybody has, you know, it's up to the owner to let your pet be a nice pet or a mean pet, or it has a lot to do with training, but this was a nice little puppy that went from 1 year from a cute puppy to attempted murder on my sister or my father or anybody else that would have been innocently walking down into the neighborhood. It was horrible. So I just don't want to see that happen with other people and the dog moving into their neighborhood and having to be in fear all the time. I know it's up to the owners to be responsible for their pets, but when you have a breed of dog like that, that's already in its nature to do that kind of damage to people, to kill little kids, like to, just the thought of a baby being mauled is I just don't want to see that happen to anybody, so I'm here to be in support of that ordinance.
Thanks, Melanie. Any questions for Melanie? Not hearing any. Thank you. Any other comments? Go ahead.
Yeah, Zach? I was there for that dog, and I was personally attacked a couple times by the dog. Never left any like real wounds, but I was, you know, obviously scared of the dog until I understand that. And I personally have owned a pit bull before, and I know how the pit bulls are, and they're really moody dogs. You have to spend a lot of time with pit bulls. They're just, to me, my personal experience is they're just not good in a little tight community like this. They're better for somebody who lives off the country, you know, somewhere far away, because, I mean, like, I understand that everybody says, you know, they're responsible for what their dogs do. Well, how can you be responsible if that dog rips a kid apart, a little kid, when that's kind of hard to be responsible for? I mean, that'd be something that I hate to see somebody have to live with. I hate to see my kid get bit by a pit bull. That's about all I can say.
Thanks, Zach. Anyone else? Joanna?
This all happened when I saw the pit bull attacking my dad, and I stood there, I didn't even have my shoes on, and I screamed so loud that for 1 week I was hoarse, and that was on my land. Okay, I didn't know that a week after that the dog was going to come after me, and again it was on my own land that is paid for. And you know, the least that would have happened would, I would have a different face, or I would have a big chunk out of my neck, or I would already be dead for 5 years. So you guys, nobody here wants to see what I saw. You don't want to be in my shoes and see your own parent get attacked by a pit bull, and then a week later for you to see it lunging at you so fast that you think you're done with. And another thing, I think on this ordinance, on the second part where it says 20 of dog bite-related fatalities, I think that number is wrong. It would be more like 62% from what I've studied. I've read a lot about it. So more like 62% are from the pit bulls. And if you add the Rottweilers in,
then you can eliminate 74% of your dog bite related fatalities with just two dogs. So thank you guys so much. I'm so glad you've taken me this far and listened to me. I do have a letter here from the American Association of Plastic Surgeons, and they all agreed. And they want to work towards a national prohibition of dangerous dogs, because these people are the ones that have to sew up the children's faces and sew up their noses. And when their noses are ripped off and they have to go to their forehead and take a piece of flap and make it into a new nose, these are the people that have to do that. So these people at their big annual meeting, they wanted pit bulls and Rottweilers to be banned throughout the U.S. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you, Joanna. Questions for Joanna? Not hearing any. Any other comments from the public? Not hearing any. Any comments from the council? Excuse me. Anybody? No? With that, what are the council's wishes?
I might talk for a minute.
Okay. Alan?
I think we've all talked a lot about this, and I think that we've all, you know, talked on both sides and looked at both sides of it. One of the things I'd like to do is read our current vicious dog ordinance that's on the book. And that this was passed in 2012-02. So this ordinance was on the books at the time of this horrible incident. But it's two parts. Part A, any dog, licensed or unlicensed, that the enforcement officer has, in the reasonable exercise of judgment, determined to be vicious, shall be destroyed by the enforcement officer. There's no time delay. There's no that. It's just simply if our enforcement officer sees or feels that a dog is vicious, he can destroy it at that moment. If a vicious dog poses an imminent threat of harm to a person or property, the dog may be destroyed to prevent such harm from occurring without notice to the owner. Period. In other cases, the enforcement officer will, if the owner can be identified, give the owner of the dog notice and an opportunity to be heard prior to destruction of the dog. And then part B of this is, no person may own, possess, or keep a vicious dog in the city. And the reason I want to read this is because as the any ordinance we enact is only as good as the enforcement of that ordinance. And this ordinance was on the books at the time of that horrible incident, which is, I mean, you sit here and my heart's just pounding. And knowing what you guys went through, the problem was the enforcement of this ordinance wasn't carried through. And no matter what ordinance we have on the books, had on the books at that time, I don't believe that it would have been carried through with. You know, he had the tools at the time to deal with that thing, that obviously vicious dog. And the tools weren't used, and so I think that there's a, you know, as we go forward here in our decisions that we make, you know, that's a big factor to consider. Yeah,
Melanie.
So it sounds like you're better off just taking the dog out yourself,
well,
than going to the,
you know,
law about it, because then you're just going to have an argument with the owner of the dog. You might as well just take the dog out yourself.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm actually saying that our enforcement officers have the right, and that's the tool that should be used. And, you know, and I think that at the time our enforcement officers didn't take care of the problem.
Time, yeah.
And what happened? You know, John had to take care of the dog himself. And that's the, you know, that's the sad thing. I think that's where the failure of the system really occurred. Was we had the law was in place, the dog should have been destroyed, it wasn't destroyed, and it came down to John having to protect his own family. And, you know, and I think today the enforcement that we have here on the island today, I don't think it would have ever been gotten that far. And then I'd like to say one other thing to Joanna, that you talked about not having a dog lunge at you and, you know, not ever wanting to have that happen. And I want you to know that not that long ago here on this island, I had a dog come at me. And I actually went to the police department and told them about it. And I had the dog animal control officer at the time go and capture the dog. And I actually received a wound. I had to take the dog to the ground. And that happened here. So I know.
Just recently?
Not that long ago.
Oh, my
and,
gosh.
And,
now you know the fear, yeah.
So I know where you're coming from, all right? I don't think that I don't. And the thing is, again, you know, the law was there, and I made the call, you know, not to have that dog destroyed because of the circumstances. It was just the circumstances. I won't go into it here, but I surprised the dog, and it was eating, and you know, and that was. But so I do know what it's like. I, honest to God, do know what it's like. Melanie,
I think. To go back to this whole incident down there with that dog, I believe that the police department had their hands were tied to do anything about the dog because they needed permission of some sort from a judge in Anchorage. Does that sound familiar? I don't know what the circumstances were entirely because nobody that was in the police department is here to explain it, but I believe they were waiting for some kind of authorization in order to go in and physically remove the dog from the home. And that waiting period of whatever was when someone was almost killed. So I don't know if there is some sort of a legal restriction there in terms of the police department acting on taking custody of the dog. Do you need court approval of some sort? Why would that have been taking place?
I don't know the facts or circumstances, but I can tell you what would happen in the instance if we had a vicious dog based on an encounter, because that's what would make a dog vicious, based on something that happened, such as Alan described. And if that happened and say an owner was protecting the dog and put it inside, well, if there had been significant harm to somebody, then there would have been an exigent circumstance that created a need to protect the dog.
We could have
actually kicked in the door. Mm-hmm. If it was growling at someone or something like that, a perpetual problem, but that the threshold of being vicious and we needed to deal with it, then you're right, we would probably have to go to court. But it should be swift. Yeah. I should be able to go to a magistrate even this evening. I mean, there are Anchorage magistrates we use for all instances. And, you know, I shouldn't have hesitated at all within an hour or two of pulling down in order to actually take custody of the dog and deal with the situation. I don't know the circumstances then, but that's not what happened now.
Okay. Thanks, Melanie. Thanks, John. Other comments on the issue? Not hearing any. And thanks, Alan. Go ahead, Joanna.
A while back, I was elected to the city council, and you know, I was on the city council. I thought, wow, what is the most important thing? I think when you're a mayor in the city council, the most important thing is the safety of your citizens. Because if you don't have safety for your citizens, then you have nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's.
Thanks, Joanna. Any other comments? Not hearing any. What are the council's wishes? We've listened to the second reading. We're at the point of entertaining a motion to adopt or not entertaining a motion. It's up to the council. And I'm not hearing anything, so for a lack of motion, we are going to move on, and the ordinance as stands. I guess it's the way it goes. We shall move on. Old business number one is our BDO audit and financial statements. And Andy, I will turn the floor over to you.
Okay. Thank you.
The audit just got finalized last week, as council member Shirley brought up earlier. There hasn't been a lot of time for council members to go through it thoroughly. What we could do is put it back on the agenda in January, discuss things in more detail if you like. One thing I did want to just point out in the audit, just a couple things. If you go to page 13, that just really gives the state of the city's enterprise funds. I think that's important to look at, like the gaming, harbor, refuse, water, and sewer. A couple things, quick things to point out, as the mayor's mentioned earlier in the workshop, you know, the harbor was in red for this past fiscal year, and really that boils down to a couple things. It was with the harbor getting ripped out and then having, you know, a few months of no activity, and then some issues in the new harbor with some damage there that's maybe affecting mortgage. Put in new electricity in the uplands. The city had to subsidize that for a little while. There was some surveying done down there in the new harbor, some of the plats, so that took up some contractual money. Basically, a combination of a few things where they kind of put the boat harbor fund upside down for a year. That's not, when I understand my short time, that won't be typical. It's usually a good a source of revenue for the city. I think every year at audit time, we always hear that water and sewer it's being subsidized by other areas. So that's something that we'll have to confront at some point. And you know, out of all of these four enterprise funds, the one that actually did contribute to the surplus, the surplus was gaming this year. But as you can see at the very bottom, the ending net position, it's still in the deficit. Where the other enterprise funds are still on the positive side, but bingo and full tax, it's in the deficit.
Well, that's a result of the full tax. The bingo side of it is the one that's pulling the deficit. Is that correct, Krista?
Well, I'm not really sure, but bingo is why we pay.
Because we subsidize it.
Yeah, we pull that.
Well, I guess the big thing, over thing that I have a concern about, and we chat a little bit in the workshop, is you can look across the board, Andy, you know, 78 for the harbor, and I understand that it's toppled up sign with the stuff we've been doing, but refuse, 142,000, water and sewer, 250,000, and I know, Alan, we've chatted, and we got some other things to look at, where you got some delinquent bills and whatnot, but we definitely have to take a look at these programs. Those are, right there, there's $390,000. And yes, we've been subsidizing those out of the harbor fund quite a bit in the last few years, and I think prior, as when I was there, I mean, to some extent, but it's starting to inch its way up. We have some delinquent accounts that are inching their way up also, and we definitely need to start tackling those issues. So the bottom line, we're doing okay. But I just wanted to bring those out because, you know, we can't be doing that forever, and it's not just, you know, the state's looking at all the same issues, and we need to look in our backyard too.
Yeah, and you can see later on in the audits and the supplementary information report where you, each enterprise fund is broken down. Actually, you know, even if we had a loss this year, the losses were less than they were in the previous fiscal year. So, I mean, I guess that's there. Is that a gray line? I don't know. 32 gives a summary of the general fund, the status of the general fund for the past fiscal year. And that shows that we actually did take in more money than we spent, so that's a good thing overall for the city's finances. See the beginning? Yes, we, you know, got in about $30,000 more. When you include transfers from one fund to another to cover, you know, some of the losses. So those are just a couple quick things I wanted to point out. I think if you're interested in the enterprise funds specifically, I think it should be, they're kind of in more detail than in the audit here. But we'll, so it's finalized. It'll go up on the city's website, and everybody, you know, every citizen, every taxpayer, every business can take a look at it. Chat for you and ask questions too.
Okay. While we're on, though, is there any questions that we may have for Andy, or did you guys want to peruse this a little bit more before?
I think if the auditors came to a final conclusion, you should be able to approve this.
Okay.
If you want.
Yeah, no,
I mean, I kind of read their letters that they did, you know. I didn't really look at all the figures. I looked at some of them.
Yeah. I would entertain a motion to approve.
The most important thing is that they found everything to be in good
standing
with the paper. Yeah. Right.
I think it's quick too. Our accounting consultant that helped. She and Krista worked really well together. I remember when I started in January, and we were looking at the audit in March. So this is 4 months earlier than FY13 that we've done. So that really helped. I mean, it's a lot quicker.
Well, I think at the end of the day, this document we're looking at is an item for us to use as a tool to make next year better. So I agree with you, Shirley. I think after reading all the things too, I don't think there's an issue in approving it. But we need to use this to make things better. So, what are the council's wishes?
I'll make a motion to approve the BDO audit financial statements.
Okay, motion's been made by Shirley to approve the year ended June 30th, 2014 audit. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Alan. Any other discussion? I'm sorry, Rita. With that, I'd go ahead and do a roll call, please, Shannon.
Alan?
Yes.
Shirley?
Yes.
Rhea?
Yes.
Danny?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Motion carries. With that, we're going to move on to old business number two, the Marine Group Flotation Payment Part 2. I'm going to let you hit on that a little bit, Andy. I think that's McGowan, I do believe. But I'll let you hit on that, and we'll move forward with that.
Yep. A good thing to follow up on audit discussion is the discussion of the big bill. this is just following up on Part 2 of the work that McGowan and Resolve did on installing more 80 more flotation billets down the harbor over the summer. We paid the first portion, but because of the design screw-up with one of the harbor contractors, and because of the inspection and administration of when the harbor was being constructed, they didn't notice that the tilts or that the floats weren't level. That contributed to needing more flotation. So that meant ordering a lot more flotation, the labor to install it, the mobilization to get it there. That contributed to a larger bill. So this invoice here from Resolve is part two of their work. Since it was such a large amount, we decided to cut it into two chunks. Now, the flip side of that is the damages or the negligence that the engineers that worked on the harbor and contributed to this bill making the flotation necessary. We are in negotiations with them now to recover costs. And right now, the amount that we had to those two firms is $98,000. So that would more than cover this portion of the bill. And if this 80 additional billets had been in the original harbor construction, that would have been $40,000. So that would have been money the city would have had to pay anyway. So. I'm not sure if we can get that nearly $100,000 from those engineering firms, but that's our goal, and we should have an answer from both of them, I think, next week to see what they're willing to pay. So that's the flip side to this amount, is that we're doing everything we can to recover some of these firms. Because they let the city hold the bag on that, so they need to compensate.
Thank you, Andy. Services rendered, we do need to pay them. What are the council's wishes?
I'll make a motion to pay the bill part two to Resolve Marine.
Okay, motion's been made by Shirley. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Danny. Any other discussion? Not hearing any, roll call, please.
Alan?
Yes.
Shirley?
Yes.
Brett?
Yes.
Danny?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Motion carries, and we'll get that check off. I see Krista disappeared, so we'll get on her in the morning. So, very good. Moving on to new business. First on the under new business is a class of 2018 donation letter. I do believe that is our present day ninth graders. And okay, Mrs. Krause is must be the teacher in charge, or the okay. Did you want to start with your children, students, or would you? Okay. Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, stand up. We want to see you. Okay.
Represent.
Okay.
Michael.
Okay.
He doesn't like talking, so. We wrote a letter asking for a donation from the city council for our Valentine's Day raffle. Yeah, raffle. And we just wanted to thank you for your consideration about it. And yeah, that's about it.
Okay, with that, we want to quiz you. I'm sorry, with Shirley.
How many items do you plan on raffling off?
We have 8 verified members. You still are getting letters back. So there are 8 present.
Yeah. So you're asking for a Samsung Galaxy 5. We were wondering how much that costs.
Melissa actually had that. I think it's probably, I don't honestly know what the cost is, because obviously we wouldn't, the only time I've ever purchased a phone, you also have to purchase
the
whole
plan.
Package. So I honestly don't know, but I could get that figure.
$400 for the phone, but not asking for a plan.
Yeah, what she said.
Okay. Other questions from the council?
Would you be interested in a land and sea book that the city published back in Centennial? It's a very informational book. It's got a lot of pictures, a lot of history in it. People would love to own one of those.
Yeah, absolutely. You're interested in anything.
Yeah.
What again?
It's not school.
There's other items that the city has. Also, I do believe we have plates, commemorative plates from our bicentennial, and there may be some mugs also. Maybe we can put a Sandpoint basket together for you guys. I'm not sure if we still have a sweatshirt or not, or if we're clean out. We're clean out. Okay, but I think we can put you a Sandpoint basket together.
That would be wonderful. Very nice.
Okay, is that good for the council? I don't think we need a motion for that. A little direction, and you can take care of that and get that off to... One of you guys will be the representative then?
Yeah, we're voting tomorrow.
Okay. So. Well, we'll have to round the stuff up, and then we'll give you a jingle.
Thank you so much.
Okay, yeah, well, we appreciate you guys coming to the meeting tonight, so
thanks
again.
Thank you.
Okay, moving right along, we have number 2 is a building permit for the Unga Corporation. What are the council's wishes? Maybe just a little bit about it. I did look over. There are some things missing. It's a wrong address, and I think John had a good idea that it needs to be looked at a little bit closer before, because, as a matter of fact, this stuff should be correct and in order. Granted, it is in the setbacks and everything, but that stuff should be all on the paperwork. So, but it is all, it actually is completed. And it does fall into all the... That happens a bit, when the council's taking care of planning and zoning.
Send it back.
Take it off.
Yeah, it's already done.
Yeah. So, but anyway, do you want to deal with these one at a time? What are the council's wishes on the first one?
I make a motion to approve Unga Corporation's building permit.
Motion's been made by Shirley to approve Unga's building permit. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Danny. Any other discussion? Not hearing any. Roll call, please.
Shirley?
Yes.
Danny?
Yes.
Brita?
Yes.
Brett?
Yes.
Ellen?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Moving on to number 3, it's a building permit for Bruce Foster Jr. This one isn't completed, and it is in the packet, and there is a drawing on there, too. It does fall in all the setbacks. Everything is in order. Again, there may be a little more clarification on paperwork next time on that one also, but What are the council's wishes?
Is it
third time we've been really quiet?
New construction?
Yeah, it's going to be a...
Yeah.
It'll
so
be
this
a
is
a
regular?
Okay.
Yeah,
this is regular.
He's going to put in a little building for his...
And this is his whole lot?
Correct.
Oh, his said that
they're all proper.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't... He didn't complete the full
yeah.
lot description, but it's up in Meadows.
I know, yeah. Across the street.
From you.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve.
Motion's been made by Rayette to approve building permit for Bruce Foster Jr. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Danny. Any other discussion? Not hearing any, roll call, please.
Danny?
Yes.
Alan?
Yes.
Shirley?
Yes.
Rayette?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Okay. Motion carries. Moving on to number four, police department fees for service schedule. And John, we're going to lean on you again for this one.
Sure, and this is a pretty straightforward request so that we have an established in writing fee based on anything in existence other than just because we feel like it should be this much money. These fees in this, I guess, resolution is what it would be, huh? These fees in this paper anyway are incorporated after consideration of what Unalaska charges and for the Act and other areas in our region. It'll give us some tools to deal with some things and incentive for people to not let vehicles linger in custody of the police department. And so it's a good moving forward document for us and for stability and some extra tools to deal with things.
Okay, very good. Thanks, John. We did discuss this afternoon, so what are the council's wishes? Go ahead, Ray.
I have a question.
Sure.
What is the unaltered?
No.
Oh.
State or new. Yeah.
Okay.
The same question came up.
I just wanted to clarify.
Gotcha.
Okay.
With that, what are the council wishes?
A motion to approve.
Yes.
Sandpoint Police Department fees for service.
Okay, motion's been made by Shirley. Do I have a second?
Yes.
Second by Alan. Any further discussion? Not hearing any, roll call, please.
Danny?
Yes.
Alan?
Yes.
Shirley?
Yes.
Rayette?
Yes.
Rita?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. Motion carries, and thanks, John.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get that stuff rolling. It'll help you out, I hope. Few more tools in the tool basket. With that, we're going to turn it over to public comments. At this time, anybody in the audience? Go ahead, Brenda.
Well, I talked to you a few months back about possibly putting on an ordinance for health and safety for non-smoking, smoke-free, too, ordinance. I shot him, he's got a copy of what King Cole has passed.
Did you guys pass it over there?
Yes.
Okay.
Unanimously, it was passed by the City Council. And so, I gave it to him to possibly put on the next agenda, possibly to speak about it.
Okay.
Get public comments from it, and we can use it to work with the attorney to revise it, like, would fit for Sandpoint, because each of them are different. On Alaska passed theirs, and we passed theirs, and then we speak also.
I know that the community of Sandpoint has taken care of some, taken upon the businesses themselves.
Okay.
So what other would that include? That
would
maybe
establish all of your businesses within your community as you see fit. And would make as many feet from the ordinances from
correct.
Businesses. Because most of the businesses have ordinance or some type of ordinance or agreement, but this would clarify from the city as well. So I would speak on the possibility of that put forward.
Right.
So would that mean, like, at the store,
50 feet,
you wouldn't be allowed to smoke in the entry, right?
Correct.
That's the types of things that would cover?
Yes.
Yeah.
There would be signage that would be mandatory, and it's in the ordinance.
Not just city.
Right.
Would be through the whole city.
Gotcha. Has been passed by King Cole and Dutch. And some of the businesses, as you know, Shimmigan has taken upon
yeah.
themselves to push
and
it outside.
And the school districts, they have their mandatory, so many feet. Eastern Ocean Tribes has their own mandatory 25 feet. But this would increase it to whatever the city decided
Well, this school has a policy where you can't even carry tobacco onto their property.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind.
That's federal. Mm-hmm. Right.
No, it was a local, the borough, the school district did it.
Yeah, but there's also a federal one. So the school district passed theirs quite some time ago.
Thanks, Richard.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So a possibility to work with your city manager and see if that's a possibility to put on your agenda. So I just wanted to speak to that.
And you do have this document, Andy?
Yeah, Brenda gave it to me months ago.
Okay.
And it's, you know, if the council would like to entertain it, sure. But I wanted that for the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe you can slide it by us and we can all look at it. So, any other comments? Alan?
I just want to understand the plus side to this. What drives this ordinance, or...
Well, what drove the ordinance, I can remember quite some time ago in King Cole, we were having a basketball tournament in King Cole. We've got the ordinance there, but we still had people who smoke outside, and there was two kids who came to play the basketball game, and both had asthma, and they had one and those two kids came to the city council and spoke about how they had to sit out the first quarter because they had asthma attacks and use their inhalers.
Walking through the smoke to get into the building.
And they have an asthma attack. And so when you have an asthma attack, you have to control that asthma for a period of time, and you miss that first quarter. And the boys team lost that 1 point. And so that's what drove it in King Cole, that the kids were really adamant that they wanted a whole city to be able to be smoke-free, health and wellness. And so it's more of a health and wellness ordinance for your community.
I can see how this could be a benefit, because like up in the community center, I had to post a sign for people not to smoke in the entryway, especially when I have kids in session, because at one point I had to walk them through the cigarette smoke to get to the bus, and people are pretty good about it now, but that's just when, you know, there's not all kinds of events. I mean, some of the other public events, you'll see people standing outside, even though there's a thing around the corner. So I could see how this could benefit places like that aren't necessarily policed for that kind of stuff.
And one of the things in King Cole that we had was, we were really surprised as the King Cole Corporation at their bar kept track for a year of the nights they had smoke-free nights. They had more people in them on the smoke-free nights overall than they did the regular nights. When people were smoking. So they came forth with their meetings, came forth with the ability to speak that when they had smoke-free nights at the bar, there was more people in attendance throughout a whole year.
Yeah. Well, that's what we did at both of our establishments. Yeah. I mean, it is different.
It's just certain feet away from the doorway of a building then, or what is it? What is written in King Cole?
I think it's, what is it? Is it 15 or 50 in that ordinance? Remember?
Oh, I haven't looked at it in months. I don't know.
So that's basically what it is. Did you make them
like
anchor to where it's, you can't smoke it.
Right.
Yeah, it's 50 for federal, right? Or municipal and federal buildings? 50 feet, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a great thing, too. And another thing, though, that just take Shimigan, for example, we've taken it upon ourselves already. We've created a smoking room, so I don't know how that would affect there, but it's actually, you know, separate. We'd have to talk about that then.
I got some lamb on the
But, you know, tried years ago, I mean, we took smoking out of all the areas. There's one room in the building that's fan,
right.
You know, drafted, and that you can't smoke in the galley anymore.
Right.
We've all kind of conformed. It's just entryways to buildings. That,
yes. I think we definitely have to have some exceptions to this rule, because you guys have went over backwards to make a separate place also.
Like the bar,
right.
Rather than have everybody out in the parking lot or something.
So, but I think it's good, and I think it'd still be, the issue would be covered.
He's got, even with the rear track, something that's acceptable for some.
And every community is different, and every community has their own right.
Yeah.
But right now, we've also got Dan Coffey, the attorney, who's drafting legislation to have the last bit.
What do you mean, the mayor-elect for Anchorage?
No.
No, I mean, isn't he putting his name in?
He's one.
Yeah.
The most wanted.
Yeah.
For the whole state of Alaska?
Really? I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
All towns and villages.
They can't smoke okay, anywhere in Alaska. And within so many feet of buildings. Similar to what Washington and California have done.
It's already
that
way. Well, that's a good
Okay, well, we'll work on that, Brenda, and get that back to the board.
And other is your name published in the newspaper? Is this not just communities?
Yeah, that'd be good. Others, we're dwindling over here. Quick, did you want to, Debbie?
I have a question.
Sure.
How open is the council to creating street addresses? Is it something that I should bring to you? I mean, it would make my job much easier.
Doesn't every place already have a street address?
No.
No.
No, everybody knows.
Everybody makes their own street address.
What people have been doing...
The internet is now getting smart enough to know that it's a made-up address because they're saying, well, that address isn't real. Are you sure you want to use it?
Yeah. Did you have something to say?
No.
Well, what's happening, I think, in town right now is like I do. You take your P.O. box number and you attach it to your street that runs by your house.
But the companies are starting to figure it out. Yeah. It's not
but, I mean, it's actually my address, basically. I mean, it just doesn't have the actual numbers.
But maybe we can get a committee together or a group together to actually sit down and give everybody addresses that can make everybody's life easier.
I'm not changing mine again. Forget that. Right. You know what it entails? No, I just kidding.
Well, the other part of it is that I have a WebFast program, which is a box holder program, and every box holder in this town is required to have a physical address. Your physical address has to be on a piece of your identity. I have to go through 350 applications and find out.
Mine's on my driver's license.
Okay, well, yours will work.
Right.
But I'm just saying it's not, technically it's not.
No, I understand what you're saying, yeah.
A physical address. I mean, you can use lots and lots.
Because I live in six, my is six.
I mean, we all do.
Six bare enough of states, right. That's
yeah.
But
and
that's
you know what's really crazy? When somebody will say, okay, I want my street to be 123 Red Cove Road. And that's actually somebody's box number.
Yeah.
So then there's a confusion. Well, who's at 123 Red Cove Road? Well,
yeah. Well, and that's their road, too.
Yeah.
Their road. I know 123.
I know.
Yeah, that's their road, too. So then
if two people decide... Or another person will say, oh, I want my address to be 24 Red Cove Road. Mm-hmm. Well, 24 is somebody's box number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alan, did you have something to add to that?
I've been through that with some companies, and what they do is they check your address against something like MapQuest online. And if it doesn't come back as a real address, they won't ship it to you.
Right. Oh, I know that. Yeah. What does this entail?
There's only one real address in South Point. I'm not telling you what
100 Main Street.
No. There's only one real address. I'm not telling anybody because it'll all
be a mess. Most of them already know it. But we had two local businesses that use 100 Main
right.
Street.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And we're going...
And sometimes they don't put a company name on it, or even just say
100 Main Street. That could be who's it?
Well, the road started down there.
Yeah. Well, can you get us some more information on that, and I can bring it back to the council. Alan,
one other thing, you know, is having. Been born and raised off of this island. When you come to this island and someone says, you know, you go to Joanna's house, and you're going, where? and for many of our EMS and of course police officers, and you tell them, you know, go down, you know, to whoever's house. It doesn't matter. Next to the ghetto. You know, that's right. There's a learning curve there. If the houses had addresses actually on it,
like the CA, you know,
yeah.
Our chief lives on the CA.
I know
what the CA is.
I know what it is.
Yeah. But anyway, if you could get us.
Everything is already lotted, right?
Right.
Is
correct.
Their plats, so you can just go 1, 2, 3, or we could all start from here. Number, what was it?
Yeah.
There's probably already one from when back in the day, the down in the police department, there's probably lots. There's already an address chart system.
Yeah,
I
there's
bet.
An effort made to identify houses by number.
Yeah.
You've got block and lot numbers.
Yeah, right.
And some of the people that live in the houses up on Kelly Avenue, the Lucian Housing houses, they have numbers on their houses, and they use those, right?
Yeah, it
like
is interesting.
I say 517 Kelly Ave. I know who. I don't know who it is, but they have numbers on their houses.
So wouldn't that be their address?
Well, that's
their road. That's their house on their number. That's their address.
Usually your addresses come from a government entity or somebody that actually sits down and surveys it and puts it down.
Most addresses in the city have the number on the house and the name of the road, and that's their address, right? No?
But I think it originates from a...
So...
I don't think people get to just make up their house numbers.
Yeah. Well, why don't you get us a letter and maybe we can approach that and see where we go with it. Alan, did you have something else? Other public comments? Not hearing any. We're going to close that portion. We're going
to
move to...
I just want to say I enjoy listening to your meetings every month.
Well, you listen on the radio?
I go for a ride and I can listen to the whole council meeting on the way down to the Colby Road.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad
as
that you...
As a rural assembly member, I enjoy listening to council members.
Okay.
Opinions. Thank you.
Well, we thank you for coming tonight, too. Andy?
We talked about the school earlier. Did the playground at the school, is it closed down for
the rest
of the year?
Yes, closed for the rest of the year.
Okay.
Yes.
But I know that's being worked on.
Yeah, the equipment is going to be probably not... It's got to be taken down. It's too harmful to kids. And until it's taken down, the whole area, I think, has to be closed down.
Correct.
Not all the equipment is old, though.
No, it is.
Mm-hmm. I was on the...
The newest stuff is like 15 to almost 20 years old.
I don't know. Surely
which, is that the wood stuff?
No, the wood stuff.
Well, you should see that. You should see the metal stuff is rusted right through, and it's just jagged edges all over it and everything.
You put that in about, I'd say, 7 years ago.
Oh, it's in really bad shape.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it lately, but it's not that. It just doesn't seem that old to me.
You can buy replacement parts for all those.
Well, I think what the thing is, you know, salt water and up there in that neighborhood is just... Yeah. So that it is really... You should take the gander up there.
Yeah. It's not that old.
Yeah. Okay.
But it is going to be replaced.
Yeah. Any other public comment? Again, not hearing any. Thank you guys for all coming. But don't run away. We have council comments, so they want to share them with you. And we're going to start with Danny this evening. Any council comments?
No.
Okay. Very good. Rayette?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Shirley?
Thank you all for coming and... It's nice to have public in here.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Shirley. Marita?
No.
Okay, and Alan, did you want to hit your trip?
I'll talk about my trip to the AML. I got the opportunity to go over there, and there were some interesting speakers that spoke. A few of them I would like to share. One was a guy named Bruce Vinson, and he was a third-generation logger out of Libby, Montana. And he was very colorful and really entertaining to listen to. If you ever get the chance, you definitely want to listen. But his message was, you know, what was protecting ourselves and our way of life in the rural environments. And he spoke about, of course, what happened to the logging industry. You know, his career and future was, you know, basically decimated in Montana, and he talked about why. And of course, the point he made was that the activist groups, they're money making, you know, businesses. That's a business. It's not there to protect, you know, the spotted owl. It's a business to make money. They have CEOs. They have CFOs. And every year they need to turn a profit, just like a fisherman needs to turn a profit, except a fisherman's looking for something to harvest. They're looking for something to save. And they'll do it by any means, you know, and that they can. And so they're looking for something to save. Once they find something to save, they're experts at manipulating media, experts at manipulating the heartstrings of other human beings. And they do this, and they get people behind them donating money to them to make the money, you know, to keep the business going. And so there's people thousands of miles away, you know, who have perfectly good intentions. Oh, you know, we got to save the salmon, you know, or whatever it is. For him, it was a spotted owl. And so these well-meaning people thousands of miles away are affecting our rural way of life. And then, of course, the point he made was from the time we're little kids, you know, how do they portray people who live in rural areas and hunt and fish? I mean, we all remember Elmer Fudd, right? You know, and I'm going to get me that Wasco Wabbit. You know, they don't portray us as intelligent people, or, you know, and they portray us as murderous and, you know, axe villains. And so his point was, one, that we need to stand together. And as he was speaking, I got to thinking about the, you know, Pebble Mine deal there. And these activists got the fishermen to oppose the Pebble Mine. And it was all on emotion, and that's how they work. They work on our emotions. Rather than facts and science, they operate on emotion. And there really isn't the science behind, you know, we can get into that, but just as there wasn't the science behind the spotted owl, yet the emotion behind that drove it, became overwhelming. So he said one of the things he promoted was, you know, staying together, don't get separated. Divide and conquer is the activist's game plan. The next is to get ahead of the curve. Use media. Make sure that we are promoting ourselves, and show that we're intelligent, we're good people, and that we're good stewards of our environment. And those were the things he said were very important. Make sure you get ahead of it, because they're using it, and that's what they do. You know, as we are good fishermen in this community, they're good at pulling heartstrings and looking for something to say. They're good at using the media, where we aren't always necessarily good. And then, of course, the Anchorage mayor, Dan Sullivan, spoke, and his message was one of doom and gloom, with the pointing out that 90% of the state's revenue comes from the oil industry. Oh, remember that evil oil industry? 90% of the state's revenue comes from that evil industry, and that we're looking at a 50% budget shortfall in the state of Alaska, to the tune of $3 billion. So the state money is going to get really hard to get, was his point. And he was promoting that we embrace industry in our state. And then the hot topic that everybody wanted to sit and listen to was attorney Matt Singer from Holland & Knight there, law offices of Holland & Knight. He talked about the new marijuana law and what it means to all of us. The first part of the law that will take effect about the end of February here, I guess it is the end of February it takes effect, is the personal use phase. And what some of the things we can't do as a municipality, we cannot ban marijuana use in private. It will be legal in the state of Alaska to privately use marijuana. The things that the municipality can, of course, is any property owner can make a drug-free piece of your property. So an apartment complex owner can have a drug-free apartment complex, just similar to adult-only or pet-free, same thing. Any business has the right to have a drug-free workplace. And certainly a municipality has the right to have a drug-free workplace. Initially, you know, as we all know, we can carry up to 1 ounce. We can have 1 ounce in our household. We can grow 6 plants, 3 that can be flowering. There can't be any exchange. You can gift marijuana to somebody, but you cannot sell it. You can't trade it for a pack of matches or whatever, anything of any value. You can only give it. Later, which they don't expect that it'll even be, you know, anyone would even be able to apply for an application. But the commercialization of it will go into effect once a marijuana control board is formed and all the laws and rules governing packaging, growing, testing, labeling, marketing, and then once that goes into effect, the things we can do as a municipality then is determine, like, business hours, when it can be sold, what days of the week it can be sold. We can determine whether we want it to be grown or sold in our community. We can either do it just simply an ordinance, or we can put it up, you know, for a vote. That's totally up to us in the city. One of the things he talked about was as far as employees and the way the law is written. We don't have you don't get credit for the latency of the drug. So if you use marijuana and you drive and you get pulled over, a police officer thinks you're under the influence and you requires you to be tested. If it's in your bloodstream, Alaska has a zero tolerance policy. If there's any residue in your bloodstream and you were driving, that's DUI, and you will be arrested. The same as if you are employed by a municipality or a private company, if you use on Friday and Saturday night and then go to work on Monday and they suspect you're using, you pee in a cup and you lose your job. So you don't get credit for latency. It was really interesting going, and I thank you guys for letting me know.
They have been interesting and they have been good. Andy?
Question. I know these are still early days in informing all the laws and regulations, but I thought one of the main things or the selling points of the proponents of that initiative was it would be marijuana regulated like alcohol. So did he talk at all about the local option piece? Because that's where I think a lot of people maybe got confused, that with alcohol, local option, you can have a dry community, so alcohol is banned. But what you're saying is a community that has no recourse, that you can't say marijuana is not allowed.
If they had it in their private residence and they grew it in their private residence, we can't stop them from using it. But we can stop the commercialization of it. We can stop it from being. We can say that it's illegal
as
to have it. It's not legal to smoke it in public or any place that can be considered public. And you know, example, a backyard. You have to smoke it in private. So they won't be able to smoke it at the bar. They won't be able to smoke it walking up and down the street, or even in. That's a public place. Obviously, if you're smoking it in your car, you're going to get a DUI, zero tolerance. So, secondhand smoke will give you a DUI. Yeah.
Debbie?
My understanding is that it's every community or every town is going to be legal in, but basically the airport is what, FAA regulated?
He touched on that, and
so it can't be transported on federal property.
That's right.
They're looking at that.
It can't be transferred in the post office. I know we've already got that. FYI, no pot on premises, period.
I got the dates here somewhere. He touched on that. In 2009, the Department of Justice declared that marijuana enforcement was no longer a priority. In 2013, they declared it that the DOJ wouldn't challenge a state's decision. But then, like Matt warned, he said, you know, DOJ policy can change, you know, overnight. So he also pointed out that any recipient of federal grant money is required to follow, you know, the Drug Free Workplace Act. And he did. He pointed out that you know, if you shipped it into the state, it's got to come across federally controlled waters or through a federally controlled airport, which it remains to be illegal, you know.
So well, the feds, you know, come across not just on alcohol, but on that marijuana for federal highway dollars. They've thrown that out there in people's faces. They wouldn't give, you know, hold that against them if someone do that to the state, so that could really put a ding on the state. And they're not going to be getting any federal highway dollars if they don't do certain things. So there's going to be a lot of interesting things coming.
Well, if in the states that it's legal where they're selling it, they can't use the federal banks for the money. But does the IRS still want them to pay taxes?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's going to take a lot of sorting, I think.
Of course. There's some interesting shows on TV. It's going to watch them.
Colorado.
It's going to be a new reality show in Alaska.
What's that lady's name? No.
They just put that on the table three days ago, about transporting to rural Alaska. So they're looking at that and how they can be able to do that because there's so many rural communities. So these smaller airlines, it might be an option that's handy.
Okay, well, that was interesting. Thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm.
With that, we're going to be going into executive session, so we'd like to thank you folks for coming this evening. And if you don't